Imagine watching the people you love for 5 years without them knowing you exist. This is the haunting reality for our nameless protagonist, a ghost who has spent her existence invisibly following four supernatural men. She knows their habits, their secrets, their desires. She's memorized the way Jude's jaw clenches when he's angry, how Ezekiel talks in his sleep, the precise temperature Kai prefers his shower, and which side of the bed Gage favors. These four reapers, collectors of evil souls who travel between worlds, have become her entire universe, though they've never once acknowledged her presence. Her existence is precarious. If she loses sight of them for too long, she begins to fade into nothingness. So she follows them everywhere, through their home, to their otherworldly realm, even on their soul breaks, hunting escaped black souls throughout the city. She's created rituals to feel normal, like saying goodnight to each man before watching over them as they sleep. What makes her situation so poignant isn't just her invisibility, but the complete one-sidedness of her attachment, years invested in men who don't know she exists. Have you ever had a moment where your entire reality shifted? For our ghost, it happens when an assassin sneaks into the men's home. Watching helplessly as the intruder raises his sword over Jude's bed, she desperately launches herself at the attacker and makes physical contact for the first time, knocking him down. The assassin stares at her in recognition before Jude slices his throat. When Jude turns his soul-reaping sword on her, it passes through harmlessly, but he can see her. After 5 years of invisibility, she's finally visible. "What are you?" he demands. When she passes through him, a strange tingle spreads between them, his eyes momentarily shimmering with gold flakes. Overwhelmed, she faints. She awakens to all four men staring at her, noticing in a mirror she's less transparent than before. They're bewildered when she reveals she's been watching them for 5 years without any memory of her past. Her transformation through an act of selfless protection reminds us that we become real to others not by seeking attention, but through genuine care. Despite saving Jude's life, our ghost faces suspicion. "If you hurt my brothers, I'll end you," he threatens. After waiting 5 years to connect with them, this rejection cuts deep. She stands guard outside all night, occasionally peeking in, her fantasy of friendship shattered. The men research ways to evict her. When they're drugged before their important gauntlet trials, she discovers deadly powers while protecting them from 11 assassins throughout the night. The next morning, their friend Harold mentions 7 assassins accepting the hit. She silently corrects him, knowing she killed 11. When the brothers stare at her, Harold sees nothing. "There's nothing there," he says, and she retreats to the weapons closet, hurt at being called nothing after repeatedly saving their lives. This paradox, being both protector and unwanted intruder, reflects the complex dynamics of unrequited attachment. Haven't we all given our all to someone who barely noticed? Her protection becomes both her power and her prison. One night, our ghost discovers she can soothe Ezekiel's nightmares with her touch. As she lies beside him, strange tingles spread through her body, and she experiences unfamiliar heaviness. She awakens physically whole, bombarded with new sensations, the softness of sheets, another body's warmth, the weight of her limbs. Ezekiel's eyes widen with excitement at her corporeal form. Just as things intensify, the door crashes open and she loses physical form. The men are furious, especially when Ezekiel mentions his first morning wood ever. They explain they're bound together, only able to become aroused when sharing a woman. Despite attempts, she can't manifest again. After avoiding them for a week, she's found small freedoms, like enjoying their TV. Dressed as Pinocchio, she watches the story of a puppet who wants to be real, a yearning she shares. Her transformation reveals that emotional connection, rather than violence, triggered her corporeal form, suggesting her humanity emerges through compassion rather than power. when the four men are taken to protective custody in a cylindrical prison with cells surrounding a fire pit, our ghost discovers she can pass through the soul stone walls. She explores nearby, finding various monsters and a man named Lamar who claims he's been framed. Through eavesdropping, she learns Lamar is involved with Manella, a royal in Hell's hierarchy. Manella warns someone has manipulated Lucifer into bringing three quad sets to Hell's throat, likely setting them up to die. After overhearing guards plotting Lamar's death, she returns to her four men and releases their cuffs using a spell learned from Manella. Though freed from restraints, the soul stones still trap them. When she announces her plan to help Lamar, they block her path. Surprisingly, Gage declares she's a gift to us from Lilith, a theory they all support. This suggests her existence has purpose, while her ability to move through Hell's barriers indicates her unique position in this supernatural realm. Isn't it interesting how sometimes our purpose finds us rather than the other way around? After returning home, our ghost discovers she can control shifting between solid and phantom form through concentration. This ability shifts power dynamics with the men. When cornered, she taunts them, proposing they must woo her to touch her. Jude rejects her terms, warning they'll become greedy, selfish, even combative, and threatening her life might end before it truly begins. She experiences her first taste of pizza, an explosion of flavors, and discovers self-pleasure, achieving her first orgasm only to find all four men watching. Her sexual awakening parallels her growing autonomy as she understands herself as a being with desires rather than merely an observer. At a club, she sees Jude and Kai dancing with another woman, feeling betrayed. When a stranger approaches her, Jude intervenes violently. The guys inform her she can't touch anyone else while staying with them, though they can. This double standard reveals how, even as her power grows, they attempt to control her, perhaps sensing their own increasing dependence on her abilities. Lucifer announces the final trial, 3 days in Hell's stomach, a deadly wasteland no one has survived. Unlike previous trials, competitors can kill each other. The men realize this course was designed for their demise, with all protections removed. As they view the wasteland of savage creatures and lava flows below, our ghost jokes about saving them without thanks, while Lucifer declares, "Let the games begin." This challenge will test both survival skills and the bonds between them and their ghostly protector. What began as one-sided obsession has evolved into interdependence. The men rely on her protection, while she grapples with her growing powers and whether their connection can ever be truly reciprocal. As they face Hell's deadliest trial, the question remains, is being needed the same as being loved? Sometimes the most profound relationships emerge from unlikely circumstances, even between the living and the dead.